looking at the microphone, putting on my headphones, waiting for Jack to start. Grabbing my beer, ain't it clear that we're drunk most every night? Worked hard all week, I'm ready to mingle. See you next Tuesday night. Couldn't feel better, 'cause we're together on the RamboCast tonight.
Since Jack's muted, I'm going to say that that is the best song you've ever done on this entire show.
You know what's funny about it is that I had a hard day today, and I came in fully expecting to not have a song, and then that one came to me about 40 minutes ago, and I went, oh, that's pretty good.
My way, we're going to do it this way.
Sorry. I had a hard day's night. That's what I had. No, I gotta agree with Matt. I think that's your best song ever.
Every week is the best one. I don't know how I do it.
Because you just keep it. You keep improving.
Yeah, I really like the lyrics too.
You know why? Because I think, because as Matt pointed out, you're more than one person. You guys. Yeah, so you got it. So when Matt's referring to you, you're so talented. You're like there's like three or four of you. Because when you say you guys, it's more than one, right?
Uh-huh. Okay. So before we started, we always talk, and sometimes, you know, things are said, you know, it can be really intense before we start, you know, like we're yelling.
It gets ugly. Yeah.
Has anybody seen the, what is it called? The Morning Show on Apple TV? You guys watch that at all?
Oh, that's with Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah. And Reese Witherspoon.
My wife has watched it.
Oh, okay.
And I saw bits and pieces of it.
There's moments where it's just like, it's so tense between the two of them. And it's like, we got 30 seconds to go, you know? And then of course it's like, oh, hi, it's so good to see you, you know? And it's just like,
so basically you're saying we're fake.
No, I'm saying that you like to give us shit. And
well, you say that, but I don't think I'm the bad one here.
You're right. I'm the bad guy.
Okay. I mean, it's not a matter of being who's bad, who's right or wrong, but
you know, I used to look forward to the RCAD because it was the only podcast I did every week. You know, it was just like this, like, oh, I get to hang out with my bros and you know, throw down some beers and just kind of talk. Now I got all these other podcasts to do. By the time
it's a nightmare, isn't it?
Speaking from someone who podcasts nonstop.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. This is the one though I do enjoy because I don't have to do anything. I just get some alcohol, show up, and say, "All right, who's going to say something that I can make fun of today?"
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about, Jack. This is actually an intervention
mm-hmm. coming from a place of love.
That's why Chris is not with us tonight.
Okay,
so. Yeah, because he couldn't keep it together.
He said I don't give a fuck about that guy.
He does not like confronting Jack. He'll confront the rest of us, but
I like to confront. Chris is not afraid to confront anyone.
True. Unless it's an Apple customer.
That's true. Well, there's certain things you have to do because you have to keep your job.
And that is what Chris is doing right now. So, and why he can't be with us. So
he wanted to be here.
He did. And he was going to give me shit for
So everyone out there who doesn't know, we recorded an Owen and Baru's barbecue last night about the Mandalorian episode 3. And before we start the podcast, Matt, ever so kindly, tells us this is a part two of two parts. And
you
Chris
just,
and I,
they just ex- wait. Hold on, you just extended what they were talking about.
We don't know. We weren't there for the first half. So it's just kind of like, hey, guys, we just want to let you know you're the afterthought of this podcast. we're just kind of bringing
you're
on.
You're the afterbirth.
Yeah, we're bringing you on as a courtesy. Because,
okay, so a little behind the curtain here. When you have a guest on your show, you know, sometimes you you make exceptions and, you know, you go that extra mile. You know, you say, oh, hey, thanks, Jack, for being on Owen Brews. I'll be on Crazy Hank, you know, right? Like
which you did, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a tit for tat. You know, you're just kind of like, you know, reciprocating the appreciation. So Ralph had asked me, not you guys, to talk about chapter.
Well, I guess now you could say you guys because I wasn't asked either.
There you go.
So this time saying you guys works.
I didn't want the first part of this show to be so confrontational. You know, I wanted to talk about.
Hey, it works for Maury Povich and Springer.
You did say it was intervention.
So. Yeah, I did. I wanted to talk about, you know, the upcoming holiday, Thanksgiving, and, you know, all of those.
I already had it.
I saw. You already had
it. I hate to brag, but mm-hmm. I made the best turkey I've made so far. Deep frying it. We have the Butterball electric fryer.
Yeah.
And the first two times I did it, it was okay. But this time it was like, oh, my God, this is – and I'm just saying it because I'll say it. It was like, oh, my God, this is really good. I don't want any other turkey ever again. This is what I want, fried turkey. That's all I want. I injected it with so much butter and olive oil and this other over the counter stuff, put garlic and herbs all over it and then put oil on top of it. But then I said, you know what I should have done? It's got bacon, put bacon all over it. So the bacon soaks in. And then my son-in-law, one of my son-in-laws said, what you should do is get bacon grease. Mm-hmm. Inject the bacon grease into it. I said, "Oh my God, that would be. I mean, I'd have a heart attack, but wouldn't that be good to have the bacon all over, just wrap the bacon around it so the bacon just get crisps into the skin. You have all this other stuff on it, and then you put bacon grease in there. Wouldn't that be good?
It's sounding delicious. And you were saying like you just injected all of this over the counter stuff. What about behind the counter stuff? You thought about injecting it with heroin or other?
I've thought about that, but you know, some people might be against it.
Well, and then you got the kids eating it.
Yeah, the kid. Well, the kids might like it more. I don't know. No, but I forget what the over counter stuff is. It's just some stuff that it has butter and some other oils in it. So
I keep saying over the counter, and I'm like thinking of drugstores. So.
Well, it's store bought stuff.
Okay.
Right. And I got butter through butter and melted the butter. Then I got virgin olive oil, poured it in, and then heated it up and put it all together. And then squeezed it and cooked it for like 58 minutes. And it just smelled good too. I had it out in the garage opening. It just smelled good.
So you had the perfect Thanksgiving.
Well, I don't know if it's perfect, but it was perfect for me because I enjoyed it.
Well, there you go. That's all.
We had to take pictures and stuff too, and it was like getting to be a kind of a pain. At least Jay was. This was the one time Jay was at least patient taking the pictures. Usually he just rushes it through and they come out crappy. We were supposed to go a week ago, but somebody was sick. So then we said, okay, we'll do it at this, we have a lake by our house and mm-hmm. it has a gazebo. We'll do it there. It's like a hurricane coming through. So that didn't work. So we said, let's just do it in the house.
Yeah.
We'll bring down the Christmas tree. And luckily my son-in-laws, they brought down the Christmas tree. It's too heavy for me. And, so they brought it down and we stood it up but it was like, I'm trying to cook. I'm cooking.
Yeah.
I'm cooking the mashed potatoes. I'm cooking everything, the ham and all this different stuff. I don't have time for photos. And it's like, run back, come back like this. Take pictures with the grandkids. And of course, yeah, four grandkids. Zach was perfect. Zach basically, he decided how he was going to pose. And Alex didn't want to do it anymore. Ava didn't want to do it anymore. And Hayden, who's like, what, 10 weeks old, 11 weeks old, he didn't want to do it in the first place. So I'm holding him like this. And at one point, I guess I was squeezing him too tight or something like this, trying to hold everybody like this.
Turned blue, didn't
he? Did turn blue, so he looks like a Smurf. But no, it's hard to get because you have all the mothers behind there going you know, trying to get the kids to smile. I'm just thinking, just take the fucking picture.
Oh,
happy sure. Thanksgiving to me. I got things. I'm cooking.
Yeah,
I got things cooking. I can't. You want to cook too long? Inject, you know, over the counter stuff. My dealer came by.
Nice.
We'll do that. And
yeah.
So, yeah. And then I have Zach going. He's watching me. They spent the night on Friday night. So we had six straight days of kids.
That's a lot.
I was, because you know, when we recorded Watchmen on, when we recorded it?
Yeah.
Watchmen on Sunday night, I was exhausted. I mean, I was literally like, oh my God, I can't do this. I almost told Jay and you, I was going to say, I can't do it. Once I saw the episode and it was so good, I did get pumped up for it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Going into it, I was like, I just want to go sleep.
Sure.
But so Zach comes up to me, and Zach's the kind of kid you can't just give him a half-ass answer because he's too smart. So he's looking at me and he goes, well, what are you doing? I go, I'm injecting it with this because it's going to be all nice and tender and stuff. I go, yeah, don't look about the little packets of heroin. I go, but I said, this stuff, I go, it's going to be tender. It's going to be good. He likes the leg.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
He likes the leg. So I said, I'm injecting it. He also likes the, I could not find the wishbone on this damn trip. We all were looking for this wishbone. Papa, when I come back next time you have the wishbone, I go, I hope so. Couldn't find I don't know what happened to the wish. Maybe Jay cut it in half because Jay cut the turkey. We'll just blame Jay. So anyway, he's looking at me. He goes, well, Papa, what happens to the head of the turkey? I go, well, I go, well, they gently, before they pack it, they have to take the head off. So they kill it. I go, yeah, they have to kill it, but they do it in such a nice way. That the turkey doesn't even feel anything.
You should show him the end of A Christmas Story when they go to the Chinese restaurant.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I'm sure he's seen it, but he's like going, so why do they do that? And I go, so the turkey doesn't feel it? I go, no, the turkey feels nothing. The turkey's glad because that's what the turkey was born for, for us to eat it. And he's like going – so I'm like, how do you tell a 5-year-old? It's like, you know, and Jay just goes, why don't you just tell him they cut the head off? And that's it. He's dead. And I go, I'm not telling him that. You can tell him that. I'm not telling my grandson that.
This is what 6 days of watching kids will do.
Yeah, it makes you batty. I mean, it really makes you.
Well, and you're also clearly sensitive to their needs, you know.
No,
Jay, Jay is just like, whatever.
Yeah,
like,
whatever. Tell the kid.
So cavalier, you know.
Tell the kid to fuck off and just eat the turkey and shut the fuck up. He didn't say those exact words, but I think that's what he was saying.
I've podcasted with Jay enough times. I can.
But it's like, and then they kept asking questions. I go, so what are they? I go, well, you know, I don't know what they do with it. I go, they pack it nice wrapping, you know, so the turkey stays warm, you know, and then stays cold. And I go,
well, they use the turkey skulls actually to make ornaments for Christmas.
new American tradition there.
It's all about reuse, recycle.
What does your tree stink? I don't know. I was listening to this podcast and fan favorite said, put the turkey skull on.
That's the new thing. It's the new ornaments.
But it's tough when you have, you know, young kids asking you questions.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to mess them up and say the wrong thing. You don't want them to have nightmares, you know, they just slice the turkey and he's running all over the place with his head chopped off. I mean,
it's just part of life, Jack. Come on.
I know. I get it. Because my dad would tell the kids stories about how, you know, growing up, they'd get two pigs. They'd raise the pigs. And then the slaughter guy would come to the house and slaughter the pigs. And then they would hang them up in the basement smokehouse and smoke them. And, you know, and when they needed bacon. Grandma would go up there and cut the bacon off.
And you'd say, that's some pig.
Yeah.
That's why you don't become friends with your pets. Well, at least your domesticated. Well, you can with your dog.
I don't know if I could. I don't know if I could raise an animal I knew I was going to eat. That might be a little tough. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love bacon. Yeah. I don't know if I could raise a pig and say, yeah, you know.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, in my home county, they have that every, you know, August or whenever it is. You know, you have the county fair, and you always see like those 6-year-olds to 15-year-old kids come in with, you know, some cow or hog or whatever they raised, you know, to be put up on auction for that thing. It's like, those kids have to be attached to that animal, because like for how many months or whatever they raised that thing so it could be showing off at the fair, and it's like, and now you're giving it away for it to be killed and eaten. Like, that's just kind
of, well, do they know it's going to be given away and killed and eaten?
I think they would have to, yeah, especially the older ones, you know.
Well, the older ones, yeah, but would a 6-year old know?
Probably not. But
he's going to Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah, he's you know, he's just going to a farm where he can run and be free, you know.
Oh my God. It's sad. I mean, then it comes to the, should I be eating that pig? Should I be eating that turkey? You know, you're, but it was so good. I had to.
We have 14 turkeys around my office at work. There's wild turkeys. And
oh, really? We have them around here every now and then. You'll see one smashed in the street.
We do. Like, I just kind of look at them, I'm like, it's a good thing you're in the city, buddy, because right now they're getting good and fat. You just want to eat it.
That was the weirdest thing. Is like, because, you know, when we first moved here, we had a lot of, now we don't have any forest land around us. But I think it's like, I've been here like a week, and I go, was that a fucking turkey going across the street? And my wife's like, no. I go, that was a fucking turkey. I go, where the fuck did we move to? Turkeys are just running wild on the street. Is that somebody's, is there a farm around here? No, but there were people said, no, there's wild turkeys everywhere.
It's probably because the forest was cut down. They don't have any place to live now, you know? So they're just
This was before. I mean, now you don't see any rabbits. There was tons of rabbits, you know, because they just,
oh, sure.
I haven't seen a rabbit and I haven't seen a deer in forever.
Yeah, watership down, man.
Yeah, it's done. Everything's gone. Hopefully the snakes are gone too. I mean, I nothing personal against snakes, but
it's about money. Rabbits
don't bug me.
Every time I think of Watership Down, though, I think of Sawyer from Lost season one.
Yeah,
that's every time, because that's what he's reading, and Kate's like, it's about bunnies.
There's a Netflix TV show, the adaptation that they did of Watership Down. It's like a four part. Yeah, it's like a four part.
It's starting Josh Holloway.
I knew the cartoon back in 78.
There's the older cartoon, but this is a newer, you know, kind of, I mean, I think they use computer animation or what have you, but I thought the animation looked good, though. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, shitty CGI or what have you, but pretty in-depth as far as following the storyline, and you know, so I can't remember some of the actors that were in it, but I'm sure you could look it up. So,
well, CGI keeps getting better and better. I mean, talk about The Mandalorian.
Yeah, but then again, it's like, yeah, I think I posted it, and Matt and I talked about it either on the Owner Brews or it could have been the Rampcast.
On Ralph's podcast?
On Ralph's podcast. You know, no, but like, you know, Harrison Ford's got a new film coming out, you know, The Call of the Wild, or is it, which one is it?
I think it was called
I think it's called The Wild.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And to me, I was like, oh, I like that book, and I'd like to watch, but the dog is completely CGI, and I'm just like, I don't want a fake dog in my movie. I want a real.
Oh, really? It's a fake dog.
It's the whole thing. Oh,
they couldn't get a dog. I mean, now dogs are being replaced by CGI.
Exactly.
I mean, we're gonna have Lassie's gonna come back, and Lassie's gonna be, and the kids will be looking at a green screen. What is it, boy?
Well, they're just looking at a tennis ball.
I know, because it's not. It's fake Lassie.
It's actually Andy Serkis. Just, you know.
That was the other thing that I was thinking of, is like the dog was actually a human on all fours, you know.
Right.
Is it a big dog? I mean, is it a dog that's not?
It just looks like a medium sized dog. Yeah.
It's no dire wolf.
Why did they CGI the dog?
I guess because they're making it do things that a dog can't do. But even then, it's not believable. It's like, well, you know, a dog can't do that. So
dogs can't play poker.
Exactly. No.
Well, I've seen photos of it though.
Yeah. The paintings.
The paintings.
Yeah. Those are really,
I don't know how they got them to stand still like that.
Speaking of CGI and how realistic it has become, I don't get a chance to go to the movies as much as Nick, or even Jack. Just, you know, it's just one of those things. Timing wise, family wise, it's just harder for me to get to the movies. But last weekend, similar to Jack, Saturday was just a rain. It was just like just pouring down rain. Nothing to do. Miserable. We were gonna go outside and do some yard decorations or something, but that all got canceled. And so we were like, let's go see Frozen 2. Take my daughter, you know, she's real excited about seeing Frozen 2. Actually, we were all kind of interested, you know, it piqued our interest. And so we went to see it. And there was a scene in Frozen 2 where I was like, oh my gosh, this is so super realistic to me. The only thing that's unrealistic now are their heads. Like, because everything else is so real, I'm like looking at their heads and I'm like, it's kind of freakish. Like the more you look at Elsa and Anna's head in this super realistic, lush environment.
So were you looking at Elsa going, she's hot? Is that what you're...
No, I was saying, this is freaky. Her head like in a weird proportion with the body.
If she didn't have like that big head, she'd be really hot. Is that what you're thinking?
There was no hotness involved. Okay.
I've never seen Frozen, so I don't.
You've never seen Frozen?
I saw like the start of it where there's ice cubes or something like that. There's some ice cube thing going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then my granddaughter didn't want to watch it anymore, so I shut it off. But I do because it's on Disney Plus, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to watch it because I've heard the song.
Yeah, you've heard the song. Now see the movie.
Yeah, I'll get around to it.
I will say that the Frozen 2, though, has some really great messages, both for girls and boys alike. There's all of the main characters, you know, some of their songs, the messages that they're sending. I was like, wow, this is some powerful stuff. There's a song kind of at the climax of the movie. I'm not giving anything away at all. This is not spoilery. But there is a moment, though, where one of the main characters is facing this dire situation, and the words and the song that they're singing could really relate to depression. And I was thinking about how powerful that message is, because sure, it's about this character and what they're going through, but oh my gosh, this relates to depression and taking one step at a time. And it was very moving. I thought I just
you didn't find it hypocritical that she's in a dire situation and she chooses to sing a song?
I didn't say that it was a girl.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that the situation was that they had big, large heads, and someone in the audience was going to be judging them.
Well, yeah,
it's
so maybe that's where the depression.
It's putting body expectations unfairly on children. Large heads and small bodies.
Yeah, well, you guys. Well, not you guys, Matt.
Okay, look, I teach drawing. That is one of the classes that I teach at a college level. We just came out of figure drawing session. You know, I have the figure that comes in, the model comes in, and I have students draw the figure. And so,
is the figure naked?
No. Well, all right. It depends on the class.
You might get more people in the class.
Sure. But okay. So I teach two different kinds of drawing classes. So sometimes I teach drawing for non-art majors, and I also teach drawing for art majors. For the non-art majors, I just avoid any uncomfortable situations for the students, and I have the model wear form-fitting clothes, yoga pants, you know, biker shorts, whatever, you know, male or female, whatever, you know, just so that I can avoid any student that might be uncomfortable with it. For the art majors, yeah, it's the figures are nude, and you get over it pretty quickly if you've been in an art class and you've had to draw the figure. It's not sexualized in any way. You're just like, okay, I'm trying to get these proportions, and this is what I'm here to do.
Can you step to the left?
So point being is that just came out of all of this figure drawing with my students, where I'm going around and I'm like, no, your torso is too large, your legs are too large, the arms are too short, the hands are too small, the feet are too small. These are all things that just happen. And I will say that every artist is a little different in what they get wrong with the figure. Some people will get the legs longer. Some people get the torso longer. A lot of people, if they're just starting, always get the hands way too small or the feet way too small. So maybe that was in the back of my mind as I'm
like
going
Barney Rubble.
Frozen 2. Yeah. Like that would be really freaky too, to see a person that actually fit the proportions of Barney Rubble.
You ever get students that you look at and go, you look at their art and you know, they've signed up for this class. It's a college class, and you're thinking, okay, at this point, at their age, they should know if they have talent or not. And you ever look at their work and go, God, what the fuck are you doing in this class? Have you ever had a student like that? Have you ever just said, oh my, I mean, you don't say it out loud because that would be rude, but you ever just got, oh my fucking God, why are you wasting my fucking time in here? You have no talent. Have you ever thought that?
I have never thought that.
Come on. No, they're not listening. They don't know you're talking about them.
I have never thought that.
Cause I took commercial. I got stuck in a commercial art class in I think 11th grade or my senior year. And I go, I never signed up for this class. I mean, I can draw a little bit, but I'm not like you. I can, if I take my time, I used to be able to do fairly well, but I was nowhere near. And the teacher said in front of everyone, goes, why did you sign up for this class? I go, I didn't. I just got stuck in this class. Because there were some times where our school was, it had like a 1,200, 1,300, must have been, whatever it was. There were a lot of kids in that class. I go, mm-hmm. I just said art class. You know, so
sure.
Commercial art was what I got stuck into. And that's more of a, you have to have a different skill set.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, right in front of the whole class. I'm right in the front row. I go, I didn't. He goes, so why are you here? I go, I don't know. I go, I look at my thing. I go, commercial art, what the fuck is that? I don't know what commercial art is. And I'm like, so I did the best I could. And then, so afterwards he calls me up. He goes, no, really. I go, I didn't. I just said art, you know, just generic. I said, and that's how I got stuck in the class. But why would a teacher say that to me? I'm not asking you to say that to someone, but.
Well, no, but you're trying to get me to say that about someone.
Well, I'm sure it's happened.
Okay. I'm sure there's been some students that I've been frustrated with because they haven't given that effort forward. When I teach non-art majors, I am basically wanting to see growth from them. Like, right. Like they're coming in with little, some of them have no experience. Some of them love it and they're just not going into their profession. So I tried to tailor the class to a wide range. And so some students might have very little aspirations, but I'm trying to get them to enjoy drawing. Think of it as writing. Think of it
as you're trying to be positive.
I am. I'm trying to be a very positive.
Even if the student has no talent.
Even if the student has no talent. Yes, correct.
Because I know I've coached hockey, and there's you know, you can pretty much tell at a young age if a kid has talent or not. And there was this one kid. His dad was a coach. His dad was a real nice guy. Even though he would yell sometimes, I go, I would tell him he'd yell from. I would skate over to him. I go, what's the rule? Not to yell at you from one end of the rink to the other. I go, yeah. I go, why? Because all the parents now are thinking I made a mistake when I didn't. I go, just next time I skate by, ask me about it, and I'll tell you why I made that call. But anyway, his son, and I think he knew it. His son had zero athletic ability whatsoever. He tried so hard. I mean, he just tried so hard, but you'd sit there and watch him go, it's just not his sport. It's just not his thing. So finally, he did end up quitting, but it was just like, I mean, I didn't say it to him. I'm not going to dash a kid's hopes and go, oh my God. But there was another kid that you said his brother was pretty good, and his dad was actually born in the same, used to ref with him and stuff. His son, his youngest son, is actually, I think he was drafted by the Colorado Rockies, the Avalanche.
Oh, okay.
If you would have asked me when he was younger if this kid was going anywhere, I would have said, no. He even said, he gave it one day. He goes, do you ever think? I go, no. No, I go, you were a brat. I go, never thought you'd make it to that. I go, but congratulations. I go, that's what hard work will do, right? And so I don't know where he's at. He's probably in junior somewhere this year or the minors, but he's going to eventually, he was a fourth round pick, I think. So eventually he'll probably make it. And I never, just not because of his talent.
Yeah,
attitude. Like you said, you have some artists that are just.
Yeah, I mean, even art majors. I've had when I've taught some of them. I mean, I've had some that just are not putting in the time and the effort. You know, and this might be what they want to do. And so, what I will have at the end of the class is I usually have like kind of a one-on-one, 15-minute little like, let's look at all the art that you've done for the semester. I kind of go through, make all my checks, and then I just kind of have a one-on-one where I'm saying like, what did you like about the class? What did you not like about the class? And then I'm also often a little frank with them about kind of where they are. I might be like, okay, look, you're going into this. You need to put more effort forward because if this is what you want to do, you're not putting the time in, you know?
Right.
And
because when you get a job, people aren't going to expect half-ass work.
Yeah. Or just even, I mean, there, so illustration is a very big, it's grown quite a bit, especially in the school that I teach. So, there's a lot more illustration majors than what there used to be, you know, 20 years ago. And so it involves a lot of drawing and a lot of commitment to draw. So it's not just like, it's just a lot of time, and they have to get really fast and they have to get really good at what they're doing. And if they're not, then they are kind of wasting their own time. So, and I had a student, that was, you know, I thought creatively, he had some good aspects, but I was also kind of like, okay, your heart's not in this. Like maybe
it's not what you really want to do.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, sometimes as a teacher, you're trying to encourage some students. Sometimes you're just trying to get them to realize that like they're not in the right place without breaking their heart. I had this one student. So we have critiques in art where, you know, you bring in your artwork, you put it up on the wall, and it's an assignment, and we go through and we
like talk Pam about it. Did like Pam did in the office.
Yeah, kind of like Pam. Mm-hmm. But everybody talks about it, and everybody like either puts it down or says like, "Oh, this is great," or "This sucks."
Did they so, really say this sucks? I mean,
not really. Students aren't usually that open to other students, but every now and then, if they can get away with it, they might. So I had this critique. For an assignment. At the end of the critique, I had a student come up to me and was upset with me that I didn't put down this other, like, he was basically like, why didn't you tell her that this wasn't good? Like this, you know, I don't feel like it's fair. Like you should have like actually like held her to, you know, like task and basically like kind of reamed her. And I was like, look, that's not your place. I said, this student over here, I'm just happy that they're making work and I'm trying to get them.
Was it Nick?
I'm just trying to get Nick to appreciate Star Wars for what it is and not what he thinks it should be.
But isn't, I mean, I'm not an artist and I'm not saying this as a joke. But isn't art something that's subjective? That's like, okay, I may find that drawing outstanding, but you would look at it and go, oh, that drawing sucks.
I think that's a big misnomer about the subjective aspect. It's like music. Like there are certain things that you have to learn before you can actually like fly out on your own. Nick, I know you want to say something. So, No, you just had that look on your eye about like.
Yeah, I do. I mean, just because it's little things that you're saying, and I'm just kind of like, oh. You know, because I was going to say, did you ever see the movie called Wonder Boys?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. I did see that. Yeah.
I remember the soundtrack, oddly enough.
Yeah, the soundtrack's awesome.
There's a Dylan song on it.
There's a Dylan song on it, yeah. I mean, it's an underrated film. I always feel like it's only available on DVD. You still can't get it on Blu-ray or you can stream it, I don't think. But it's with Michael Douglas, Tobey Maguire, Katie Holmes, Robert Downey Jr., and... crap, I forget what her name is. The great actor. It's got a great casting, but
Close?
No, not close. But from what you're saying, because he's a writer, Michael Douglas's character is, and he teaches at a university, and one of his classes is exactly like what you're talking about. And the Tobey Maguire character writes, you know, short stories, novels, all these things like that. But his entire class, when it comes to sharing their opinions on his art that he's just created, they're always like, you suck. Like, you know, you don't know how to write. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, who would read or who would write this shit?
And so this is before everyone got a trophy.
Yeah. Well, this is, I mean, I forget when, and you know, it's not Michael Douglas's role as the professor to criticize. He's just there to encourage and say, keep going, try harder, you know, things like that. And he does admit to someone else, though, later in the film that the reason why, you know, the class hates Tobey Maguire is because he's 10 times the writer they'll ever be.
Oh, sure.
And they know it.
So they're jealous. So they just,
yeah, they're jealous. But I mean, but because he, it's like, and that's what I was going to say, because on the flip side of what Jack's question was, you know, he's saying, you know, do you have a student that's just so bad you want to go, do you suck? Well, do you ever have a student that, you know, if you do have a nude artist, you know, and you're saying, you're talking about hands or limbs being too big or too small. Like, what if he's someone that's like a Salvador Dali that comes in there and goes, you know what, I'm going to make his hands melt, you know, or just kind of be weird. And that's me. And it's because he doesn't want to stick to a traditional conform of art. You know?
Typically there's parameters to what you're doing in class where you're saying like, okay, like I want you to, Jack's being abducted by aliens right now.
the tractor beam.
No, I mean like when you're doing figure drawing, at least during those sessions, you're trying to be as accurate of depicting that as possible. Mm-hmm. When it comes to assignments, you might say like, okay, like you have those liberties, or you might like put certain parameters in. I always tell artists that there are rules, you know, you create the rules. Sometimes the rules are created for you, mm-hmm. you know, but there's always a parameter and you create those, that structure. And you see it a lot of times with musicians too, you know, like, oh, we're only going to like, this album's a concept album. It's going to have this and this and this. But at some point, you yourself break those rules. You know, you might make a whole series of paintings and you're like, oh, I'm never going to use green. That's just not my theme or whatever. But then that fifth painting or that 10th painting, you're like, and now I'm going to use green, mm-hmm. you know, and you break that rule or whatever that is. But as far as like in-class work, though, and trying to get students to be as representational and just draw with what they see. So and there are times I think that they're. That you can improv and you can have your artistic license and let that show through. But, you know, if there's an assignment, or a teacher is giving you a certain specific guideline, it's there for a reason. You have to kind of do it. And a great teacher once told me that if you think you're Michelangelo, go out and be Michelangelo. Why are you here? Huh. So, you know, and I just always, oh, Jack's talking, but can't hear him.
I'm muted. Okay. Anyway, that was going to be my next question. Have you ever had a student come up to you and, you know, say, Mr. Professor Matto, have you, I really want to work for Disney. I really want to work for one of the top Pixar, or, you know, one of the, I'm just trying to think of it.
Sure. Yeah.
And have you ever said, go for it? I keep going back to the, how do you tell someone have you ever just dash someone's dreams. Have you ever said, no, you suck. You say
you're in the wrong class. You need to go to graphic design 101 down the hall.
I'm like, what are you doing in Indiana?
Yeah.
I mean, really, like, I'm like, well, why stay here?
Because mm-hmm. Seriously,
that's what you want. Like,
when I was coaching, I would have parents come up, what do you think of my kid's chances of making the NHL? I go, well, because I remember my first coaching class I ever took. They basically laid out what the odds are of making the NHL. And this is when the European players first started coming. This is back in the 90s. European players just really, you know, the Russians were coming over and all this. So the odds of coming, making the NHL were coming, you know, from maybe 2% down to maybe 0.5%. And so you have these parents, I go, and the guy teaching class said, steer them towards a college scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always say, and the kid would have talent, but you're like going, do you realize, you know, we have, you know, in San Diego, we had the minor league team, the Gulls, playing there. They, at the time, they were like the lowest of the low of minor leagues. And these players were from, you know, they were just amazing players, but they yet were only playing at the lowest level of professional hockey.
Oh, sure.
So you're like going, all right, these players are great. Mm-hmm. And they can't make the NHL. And we did have a few NHL players that played, you know, that would come to the rinks. And they were just, the talent was just, everything they did was just amazing.
Hmm.
I mean, it's like any sport. They just have that, you know, they just have that gift.
Yeah.
So the guy said, gear them towards going to getting a college scholarship, and then anything can happen. So that's what I would say. I go, well, you know what? What you should do is gear them towards, well, they're not really good at school. I go, tell them to work harder in school, because getting that college scholarship, getting on that college team.
Yeah.
We'll get the scouts. We'll see them. So.
Yeah. It is the next step.
So that's why, be honest with you. Usually it's, you go to juniors, or you go, usually if they're not looking at you by the time you're 12 or 13, odds are you're not going to make it.
Wow.
I mean, it's maybe 14, maybe. I mean, it's just how it is. I mean, that just how they start looking at you, and you know, you go to like a private school where they.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
There's a chance. Yeah. It's just funny how you have to. Because I don't want to dash any kid's dream. I don't want to tell a kid,
sure,
fuck, you're never making the NHL. I never wanted to do that.
So I think what's funny to me about kids' sports is like my, you know, hockey is not something I grew up with because it's not really played in the South. At least it is now, but it wasn't.
I didn't grow up with it either, but when I was like 21, 22, I got into it. But
like my youngest nephew, because he didn't want to be like his older brother, he didn't want to play the traditional sports like baseball and football. Not because his brother's playing those. Because I want to do something else, so he chose hockey. And he's a good little athlete. But for small little Knoxville and his league grade, he's one of the best players there because he really likes the game. And he got picked to go play like Pee Wee for the state, you know, or like, you know, a more state competition thing, you know. And then he quickly saw there were other kids that were way better than he. You know, he was caught.
Is it Gordon Bombay?
He was gone, but yeah, he invented the triple deke.
The flying V.
Yeah. But no, I mean, but it's just funny because, like, you know, he was arrogant even for an 8-year-old. Like, you know, like, I'm better than all these kids that he's playing with. And then he goes and actually plays with the tops of these other kids. And he's like, oh, crap. Like, I suck. You know, and it really knocked him down a peg. You know,
it is an eye. When you might dominate that. Because I remember we tried to get a travel team going. When I first moved, I said, look, I go, yeah, they might be the best house players, and house players are just kids that play, you know, recreational. I go, once you get into travel, I go, you're talking about kids that are practicing 5 times a week. Mm-hmm. They're training 7 days a week. I go, no, we got the best kids. We went out there and got our asses kicked. It was like, oh my, and the parents are looking at me like going, try telling you this. I go, yeah, your kid's good, but he's not up here. I mean, he could be if he had the talent, I mean, not the talent, but the training, but it's just, it's a different beast. And it's just, you know, the parents, you know, they just think, oh, my kid's on the fast track to the NHL. It's like, you're not. I mean, odds are it's not going to happen. But
well, right. In relationship to, you know, the Wonder Boys comment that you were making about, like, I've never seen other artists. I mean, they might be jealous. They might be like, fuck that guy. You know, or fuck that girl. Like they might be like a little catty, you know, or like, you know, amongst themselves. But if they recognize talent, if they like what you're doing, they're going to talk about it in a critique. And I've seen it like critique after critique after critique. You put 20 pictures up on the wall and you're like, okay, let's, you know, what should we talk about here? They will gravitate towards some of the best ones right out of the gate. You know, like we'll critique 20 drawings, right? I will do a critique tag, basically, like, okay, like we're going to start with, you know, Jesse's over here because everybody wants to talk about it. It might be one of the best in that class. Like, they're not going to talk shit about it. They might say like, well, you could have done this and this, but I really love it. Like, they're never just like cutting them down just to cut them down. Well,
and that's good too.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's
I mean, sometimes you have to recognize that someone's better than you, right?
Right. And that there's different styles. And I think that that's kind of hard, you know, is to accept that idea that, like, oh, I can't draw like this other person. I have my own way of drawing and accepting it. It's just kind of like it's almost like your own body or your own skin. It's like, yeah, you know, you might not like having straight hair. You might not like having curly hair, but
Could be worse. You could have no hair.
I might not like having no hair. Oh, speaking of no hair, my wife's been watching Dick Van Dyke, and there's an episode where he doesn't have hair. Or something.
That's right. Yeah.
My wife and I were watching it. And I was like, you know, bald cap technology's come a long way because you could really tell that it was fake. It was just, so.
because there's so many actors and actresses, you know, that because I think it's Matthew McConaughey is balding, you know, and every role that he had
hair plugs.
But did he? But like,
he was bald. I mean, he was like it was like retreating, and he all of a sudden he has, I mean, but he has the money for the golden, you know,
right,
golden locks. I mean, there's, you can tell some, like Joe Biden. You can tell Joe Biden's had some plugs over the years because right, the dude was bald.
And Trump.
And Trump. I mean, now he has, they have, if you have the money, you can get it done.
Yeah. And then, you
know, that I noticed.
But then you look like Emilia Clarke and a lot of actresses, you know, because, you know, she's dark brown or black. I forget what her natural hair color is. But, you know, like, I mean, she still has all of her hair. Then they put that big blonde wig on her and it looks like it's just like that is her hair, but it's not. And you're like, wow, like, how do they mat that hair down to where it looks so natural?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Or even on SNL when they, I mean, those are like some quick changes and sometimes mm-hmm. they put some bald caps on some of those characters and you're like, damn, that looks real. You know?
Because sometimes you look at the act, especially with the actresses, they have like a large amount of hair and I go, how do they hide that hair?
Yeah. They just got to slick that stuff down. There's
a show. I know. I think Matt, you watch A Million Little Things.
No, I've never watched it.
Okay, I stopped.
You told me there was a darker version of This Is Us. So
I stopped. Like, actually, my wife has gone on ahead. I'm like 4 episodes. I can't watch it. It's so depressing. Hmm. I mean, maybe the people in the listening to us can. I go, can nobody be happy on this show?
See, and I know we've talked about this, but the fact that when I watch This Is Us, I mean, I look forward to like, okay, maybe there's a sad moment.
Right.
Maybe there's a part that's going to pull at my heartstrings. But there's always a part that's like a little bit of joy and a little bit of happiness. And I got to have that. Like, but you know, I mean, it is the one show we will sit down together and well, I mean, there's a couple other comedies that we'll watch, but I mean, it's like, you know, I might surf on my phone while we're watching a sitcom, but This Is Us. It's like, all right.
I love, unfortunately, Sydney and I do so many podcasts and stuff that we kind of watch it differently. You know, we used to watch it. Most of them we watch together, but sometimes she goes, go ahead and I'll catch up with it later.
Yeah.
But I'm so far behind. I told her, I said, I can't watch anymore. I go, it's so depressing. I go, every single person on that show, it's just life sucks. I get it that life sucks sometimes. I go, but you know, but they have an actress on there that had cancer.
Oh.
And now she's in remission, but she's, you know, she had the chemo,
yeah.
But her bald head looks real. I used to think, wow, did they shave their heads for this?
Right.
But I guess, you know, it could be CGI. I don't know.
Hmm.
But other than that, the show is so depressing. Is someone out there to tell me if I'm wrong. The show is because like this is, I love This Is Us because maybe I relate more to the characters or something. I don't know because there are some times, you know, like, you know, when, you know, they're fighting alcohol, you know, Nikki comes out, you know, spoiler alert,
right.
He looks like he's got his life on the right track. And that's a positive.
Yeah.
You don't get that in A Million Little Things. It's like, okay, you know, she survives cancer. Oh no, but her mom's is a bitch to her. It's like, okay, well, why can't she just be happy for a second? Come on, why? She just survived cancer.
You almost went Jimmy Stewart there.
Yeah. I don't know. Mary, what the hell's going on? I heard a bell. Anyway, I don't know. I just go, God, and I had so much hope for this show.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has, the actors are great, but it's like, fuck. Have some positive in it. I mean, maybe I'm not seeing it, but even my wife says, yeah, it's getting to the point I can't watch it. It's so depressing.
You know, this podcast is getting to a point where I just can't listen to it anymore. And I think we should take a commercial break. Because there's just so much to deal with.
And sponsored by A Million Little Things.
You know, like a sort of, but not really. Like what we were talking about, you being a teacher, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
The only kind of creative class I ever took was a creative writing class in college because I needed it for the credit. And I, you know, I like to write little stories. You know, I mean, they're fun. But I remember,
as a Matt, writer,
Jack's a writer. Yeah. But you know, it's like because you're talking about like songs earlier, and like same as with writing, and even probably with art. You know, it's so hard to really do something original these days because, like, you know, Simpsons did it. Like, you know, it's like it's one of those where it's like, oh, so. And one of my memories of that class, and I'll never forget it either, was the challenge for that day was, you know, within the hour period was write or rewrite an original story. Like, I mean, either write an original story or rewrite an existing one completely. And so I just kind of brainstormed for 5 minutes and I wrote this story in 3 pages as quickly as I could, just basically just the skeleton of the story, you know, of what it could be. And I don't know, 2 weeks later when I get the paperback, you know, it's A++, like, love this story. It's even better than Hemingway's. And I kind of went, what? You know, like Hemingway's? I was like, what story did I rewrite of Hemingway's? You know? And
you're being called out for plagiarism.
No, because you could rewrite a story. That was part of the either write an original or rewrite a story. You know, so I didn't plagiarize, but I had never had read this story. I thought I had come up with an original story, a little short story. And so it's just one of those things where it's like, it's that easy to write something. Yeah. And it's the same as, like, you know, if you're writing a song, how many people have been sued? You know, like George Harrison for My Sweet Lord for saying, like, you know, he's so fine. He's so fine. You do it unknowingly and you're just like, oh, shit. And so it kind of sometimes just, like, crushes you if you really think you created something and then you realize, like, oh, someone else has already done it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Enya, of all artists, like, I remember reading something, like, this was back in the 90s, where she did not listen to any other music at all. Like, it was like she almost starved herself on that stuff because she did not want it to influence her music or her writing. And I get that. I mean, we're so inundated with so many different things, you know, and there's things that are just in the zeitgeist. I mean, think about this. Photography was invented by 2 different people. At the same exact time, but one person gets the credit because they were the ones that got the patent first. So, you know, that idea.
They had the most money?
No, it was just a timing thing. I think there was, and again, I apologize for our listeners, but I do not have this information in front of me.
They're not listening at this point anyway.
Oh, okay. They tuned out after the commercial.
They said that commercial was so good.
But I want to say, though, that there was an inventor in England and there was an inventor in France right about the same time. So, you know, these things are just in the air, you know, sometimes. So
plus, you know, a lot of times now you have so many, you know, how many different things can you come up with that's original? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, movies, how many movies have been made? How many TV shows? That's why when you get a show like Lost or you get a show like Breaking Bad or The Wire, just shows that are just out of the blue. But you were talking about, you know, English. I'm not an English major, obviously. But I remember I don't know about you guys, but every fucking year the English teachers would go, write your favorite Christmas memory.
Every year.
Maybe the San Diego thing, just lazy teaching. And I remember it was 11th grade or 12th grade. I went to the teacher. I said, look, I go, I've been doing this for like 10 straight years. I go, it's the same memory. I'm not in school. That's my favorite Christmas memory. Can I make one up? She goes, as long as it has something to do with Christmas. So I made it where Jimmy Hoffa was working as an elf at the North Pole. And literally, it was only supposed to be like a page long.
Did he unionize the elves?
That's what I'm thinking, man. Yeah.
I don't remember the whole story because I went on. I got so – when I can use my imagination, I love it. And so I was like – I wrote this whole – it was like 6 or 7 pages. It was only supposed to be a page. She gave me an incomplete, said, you have to do it over again.
What?
I said, why? She goes, this has nothing to do with Christmas. I go, it has Santa Claus in the damn – I go, it's all about Christmas.
Yeah.
She goes, I told you. She goes, no. I go, no, I'm not doing it. And she threw me out of the class.
I mean, this is what I imagine the story. I mean, Jimmy Hoffa shows up. He's an elf. He organizes the elves, the union. Yeah. And then somehow he ends up in a snowy grave, but they don't know where it is.
Yeah. He's under the snowman from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't remember
how it went, but it was like, I was so excited about doing this. And the teacher just said, screw you.
Yeah.
And I get thrown out of the class because I would not do another. I said, I'm not doing it. No, I did it.
It is funny how, like, kind of like what Matt was saying about being influenced by things. Same thing, Jack. I remember it clear as day, like 5th grade, same thing. It was write a Christmas story, just write a Christmas story. And me being the sick minded child that I am and still am to this day, I wrote a story called The Night Rudolph Died. And and that's, and you had to read this aloud in class, and you know, it's, my mom has it framed in our home because it's just, it's so me, you know, and it's, that's what it's about, is that, you know, terrorists attack the North Pole and Rudolph gets killed, you know. And I remember all the kids like being shocked at the end, especially when Rudolph just stayed dead, you know, and they're like, did you not read it, did you not hear the title? I mean,
does Rudolph, nose go,
the rest it just go? Flickered out. Yeah. And, you know,
he, oh, it flickered out.
Yeah.
I like the idea that it's a bulb. It's like,
it's a bulb. Yeah. Yeah.
Beep, beep. But that, but beep, that's beep. A teacher probably encouraged you.
I remember the teacher actually was the one who said that, like, that's how it ends. And I went, yeah. The title says Rudolph dies and he dies, you know.
But to me, that's you're letting the child, because, you know, show your imagination. And
yeah.
I think in school too much, and they crush it. They say, no, oh, no, sure. you need to conform. You need to do this. Blah, blah, we're assembly line. And I think that's why I always had trouble in school, because I never thought that way. I was always like, well, why don't we do it this way? Or why don't we do it this way? Or why don't we do it? My mind was always going somewhere else, where the teacher was like, no, asshole, this is what you have to do. And I'm like, going,
where they beat it out of you with the homework. I mean, I was really, really proud of my son. I shared this image with Chris and Nick in our private BBQ group. Was it
you guys? Should I go on mute and not talk? Because
it's just for you guys.
My son the other day, like, he all of a sudden he breaks out the computer, and he's got his, you know, his thing pulled up where he's writing a story. I mean, this is all on his
own dime, right?
His own time, nothing to do with homework whatsoever. But he is rewriting The Last Jedi.
Oh yeah.
To include himself and his friends from school.
Who's it? Is it Hurley? Is your son named Hurley?
No.
you did warn him not to cross the mouse, though, right? Because they will put a hit out on him.
Cross the mouse. Oh, yeah. Don't cross the mouse.
Don't cross the mouse. Yeah. Mickey is not a kind mouse.
M-I-C-K-E-Y?
Why?
Why are you stabbing me? Yeah.
It's funny, some of the...
Perfect.
Look out, Mickey! Ah!
Yeah.
It's just amazing that, like, he would have that, like, gumption to be like, yeah, I'm gonna rewrite myself into this story. And
that should be encouraged, right? That should be, I mean, I know teachers have a rough job, and I'm not bashing teachers, but that should be encouraged, not discouraged.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, totally. I mean, I just was excited that he was doing something creative and writing related.
I used to tell my youngest daughter, because she has just a vivid imagination, and I go, right, do this. And she just never, she would do it. She would come up with these stories, which I go, put it on paper. And she's,
yeah.
I know. See, and I always like stories, but I've never been a writer. Like, I always go to the visual medium. That's just my nature. But when I was in grad school, 2 years of my life that I never want to repeat again. It was intense.
You're an asshole professor?
Well, I was on my way to become an asshole professor.
No, you had an asshole
professor. Oh, I had an asshole professor? I don't want to name names.
You don't have to name the name. You can just say, yeah, he was an asshole professor.
I will say the one asshole professor that I had gave me a B- for no fucking reason whatsoever. I was just kind of like, and why did I, like, I have no explanation for this. And that's probably the one thing that shaped me as a teacher, as an art teacher, is that I at least give my students the number, like a rubric, something that breaks down why I gave them the grade that they did.
Right.
It wasn't just like out of the blue, like, oh, you're a good student, so I gave you an A, or, oh, I don't like you, so you get a B, you know? But anyway, I was working on this story, and that was the biggest thing that came up in the critiques that I was in as a grad student, is, you know, people wanted to know the story, and I was still writing it, and I couldn't tell them because I was in the middle of the process. It was like, I was still formulating what I wanted it to be about. And I felt like if I said, it was XYZ, then I would be held to that XYZ. And it was still right. in this like, you know, amorphous state of like coming into an existence. So,
yeah.
Because
it evolves too. Because like, I mean, there's different, like, Matt is, I rewrote episodes 1, 2, and 3 of Star Wars, and Matt's read all three of those. But you do, you constantly will just, I mean, I wrote those years ago
and you rewrite episode 7 too?
I have an outline for episode 7. Okay. I've never had the time to really flesh it out. And then I know where I would go with 8 and 9 if I was in charge of writing them. But it's just one of those things, like Jack's saying, like write it down. It's because you don't have time, or you're just like, it's up here. I know what to do. I just don't want to do it. But even to this day, though, I'll think of new things to go, I could add that in episode 2. I could add that in episode 3. Like these little extra lines, you know, and then you're like, but if you were a writer and you'd already had it published, you can't do it again, you know.
Right.
And you can't add in things.
Well, that's the problem with some people is because they can never – it's never perfect for them.
Yeah. McClunky.
I can always make it better. I can always make it better. I can always make it better.
Yeah.
So Jack, are you aware that George Lucas changed and edited episode 4, the original Star Wars,
again?
He did it again
for Disney Plus.
Did it again for Disney Plus.
I have not heard that. No. Yeah. So I'm about this close to smacking George Lucas. I'll do it.
It's his art. He gets to change it.
It's his art, but it's my show.
So he went into episode 4, the Han shot first debate, where he had Greedo shoot and then Han shoots Greedo. And he's edited this a couple times in post. He added a line for Greedo. So once Greedo gets shot.
Right.
Greedo. Oh no! Is it right before he gets shot, or is it as he gets shot?
I think it's as he gets shot.
As he gets shot, he said. Greedo says, "McClunky." That's it. That's what's been added.
McClunky.
Yeah.
It's a nonsense word that I think George Lucas is trolling.
Did he
Disney.
Learn from no?
I think he's trolling. I think he's trolling Disney, and he's just saying the whole thing is McClunky.
There's a lot of things like in the 2011 editions, like the sound that Obi-Wan makes now to scare off the sand people. You're just like, what the hell is that?
That was really annoying.
Yeah.
Because I always liked the original.
Yeah.
So
I get it's his work, it's his art, it's his baby. But at some point, you say, okay, everyone loved it.
Right.
Everyone that was gonna like it liked it. Yeah. You putting these little things in here or there are not making it better.
No. Well, I mean, some of them are. Like the original from 77, the Jawa Sandcrawler, that looks really bad, you know, in the 77 version. So the 97 edition really made that pop.
Well, something like that. I mean, okay.
Or the X-Wings flying to the Death Star in the 97 version, the special edition. Those were improvements.
Because the technology is there. But
Jedi rocks. Jedi sucks. Lopty Neck is so much better, in my opinion. And the fact that they changed that in Return of the Jedi, or the Anakin Skywalker ghost. I mean, we could go on and on. There's a bunch of them, and it's just like it gets messy.
Why don't you stop fucking with the old movies and make a new one?
Well, he did.
Yeah,
he did. Work on American. Didn't he? Wasn't he? Didn't he work?
Yeah,
on
he did do American Graffiti.
All right, go make another.
Went back and fixed THX-1138. I mean,
he's really only made 3 films. Yeah, which is THX-1138, American Graffiti, and Star Wars. And
American Graffiti is an amazing. I mean, it doesn't get the credit. It's an amazing movie.
Yeah, and then he kept.
I think so. But American Graffiti 2 is a pile of crap. I mean, I'll watch it.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, we're trying to capitalize on. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't bad. But the first one is amazing.
Yeah. But Lucas has a way of just destroying some of his stuff he does. It's like, because he had been wanting to make a movie about the Tuskegee Airmen forever, and he finally did with Red Tails. But they made an HBO film in like 93, 94 called.
It was far better.
It's far better. Yeah, that one. The cast is unbelievable in that one in the early 90s. And when Red Tails came out,
It's terrible.
It is so bad. And it's because he kept diving into these side stories. It's like, just tell the main story, George. That's all you need to do.
And whatever the Airman thing on HBO was excellent.
It was
excellent. I mean, in fact, I didn't even know. I didn't know that much about it at the time. And then when the Red Tails came, I want to see that. And I went,
yeah, it was just, yeah.
Sucks, George.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, also you have, you know, in the 90s version, I mean, you have Lawrence Fishburne and Cuba Gooding Jr. And, like, you have so many good actors that are in that film. It's like you couldn't go wrong with it, really.
Right.
I forget where we're going with all this, but.
Well, George Lucas, and it's just like, it can, you know, it's like.
Yeah.
Well, and they redid Midway, and I was like going.
I've heard mixed things. I kind of want to see it, but I kind of don't want to see it.
Now, the original Midway, I saw it. It was when. Of course, you guys won't remember this, but I think it came out when I was like 10 or 11, and it was a surround sound. And it would actually, the thing was, it was so loud. The selling point was your seats would vibrate like when the planes were taking off. Mm-hmm. I love Midway. I love the movie. Now there's some terms in there that they can't say anymore because you know what the American soldiers used to say about the Japanese soldiers, and they'll if it's on TNT, they won't say those lines. They'll blank it out. But I don't know if what could they do with the new one? I mean, the old one has an all-star. It's Charlton Heston, Henry Fonda. It's an all-star cast.
Yeah. I mean, the only things you can improve is just because of CGI. You can show actual air combat a lot better. You can show, you know, it's more going to be just effects than acting.
I guess, but I don't know how you can improve on the story. I mean, story was, I mean, it was excellent.
Yeah.
I don't know how we can improve on this podcast. Except I was thinking maybe we go into a bonus.
We can do that, I guess.
Yeah. So Nick, do you have the time?
I do have the time. I wanted to talk about one thing that happened today because I'm not sure if the patrons because I got questions today because it snowed.
Oh, and yeah.
So I wanted to tell this story so at least everyone could hear it, not just.
And I'll give my review of Ford Ferrari in the bonus.
Yeah, we have two movies to review in the bonus. So anyway, I got to work from home today because we were scheduled to get a crap load of snow, and we did. It started snowing yesterday at 3 p.m. and did not finish until 1 p.m. today. And we got, in my little area of Colorado, we got 13 inches of snow, which is the most snow I've seen in my life.
That's right. I keep thinking you were used to snow, but
no.
Los Angeles, Tennessee, no.
No. I mean, it's not. We had a blizzard in 93, and that's the only one I remember that, and I was 12, so I don't remember how many inches we got, but I remember it being a lot of snow.
You didn't write it down?
No, I didn't write it down back then. But people were curious about if the snow pusher snow shovel worked today.
Yeah.
And so I did. I bought a snow pusher and a snow shovel on Sunday. I'm just lucky that I didn't know it was going to snow.
You didn't get Chris's machine?
No. Let's just say I am going to buy a snowblower now. Because I got up and let the snow finish, and I went out because I'm required to keep the sidewalks clear by law. And
wait, what?
Yeah, I don't know why.
What if you're just physically able to clear your sidewalk? What happens?
You get a fine if you don't keep the sidewalk.
Put like a little plow in front of your rascal. You know, clear it out.
I guess you have to pay somebody or something. But it didn't make sense when my landlord told me that I am responsible for keeping the sidewalks clear. I was like, but it's not my property.
sidewalk is government property.
Exactly. And I was like, but then you think about it, it's like, well, if the city is responsible for clearing every sidewalk in the city, that's a lot of labor and a lot of
money. That's great, but this is not Russia.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not Russia.
But yeah, I started at the house, you know, and I cleared off the path from the sidewalk to the house. And then I was already going, fuck this shit. It worked just fine. You know, I mean, over a foot of snow, even with a shovel, yeah. Like, you do like half.
That's a lot of snow.
And you do the other half, and it's just mm-hmm. like, then it's a wide sidewalk. So I'm having to
people,
like,
if people have never experienced snow, because I, for the longest time, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, you're literally you're dripping. I mean, it could be 10 degrees outside, but you're dripping mm-hmm. in sweat from shoveling this goddamn snow. You go out there all covered in, you know, because you're freezing, then at the end you're wearing a t-shirt and shorts,
and that's exactly what happened. I did half of it in 1 hour, and then I came in. I wore my Henley, which Jack did not know what Henley was. I had my Henley.
We'll explain what a Henley, because I'm sure everyone 90% of people out there do not know what a Henley shirt is.
I will. Yeah, in the bonus we'll talk about what a Henley is.
Okay.
I'm wearing my Henley, a shirt, my jacket with the fleece inside. Good pair of pants, and then my shell pants, you know, so I don't get wet. And yeah, within an hour, I'm just like, fuck, I'm hot. I can feel the sweat just rolling down my back. Yeah. And it's like,
Worse than back sweat because it drips all the way. I mean, yeah. You guys know.
And did you get the wet snow too, where it's like kind of heavy, like at the bottom?
Because that's what pissed me off is because I have the pusher and the shovel. Right. And when I would be doing the shovel and then I would flick it. And then I would come back, and the snow's still in the fucking shovel, and I'm like, "God damn it!" And so I'm like hitting it, and it just.
I told you about the neighbor I had. He was from Buffalo. This is years ago. We first moved here. We had a heavy snow, and he comes knocking on my door, and he goes, "All right, Jack, let's go." I go, "What are we doing?" He goes, "We're gonna get all the driveways," and he had beer. He goes, "Bring beer." So we were drinking beer, and we'd go to the next house. The next guy would come out and goes, "Here's some beer." We went to every house. So we were drinking beer at each stop. It was like we were – because we don't have sidewalks on our street. It's mm-hmm. it's grass street, and the streets are really narrow. And so it's like – I go, this is a great tradition. I love it. He goes, yeah, that's how we did in Buffalo. Hmm. He goes, someone would get beer and come knock. He goes, grab your snow shovel and beer, and we're going to go out. And so I go, all right, I'm going out. And like I said, at first you're wearing – you know, you're bundled up. You're wearing the heavy jacket, ski – you know, the toboggan, whatever you want to call it. But at the end, you're like, going, okay, I'm wearing a tank top and my underwear because I'm just dripping in sweat. But it was the greatest tradition, and now nobody does it anymore. Because
My neighbor gave me a whole six pack of beer or whatever because I snowblowed the alleyway, and then now it's just like no beer, no snowblowing.
He gave me beer. He was doing my driveway. It was like, you know, he was like, you know, he just, I think it was just an excuse to drink beer.
Probably.
Well, he was a great, we would talk football forever, but it was like, yeah, exactly. But that was great times, but now, no, nobody does it anymore.
So you said it, what I call it, like, Matt, do you call the warm thing you put on top of your head a toboggan or a beanie?
You mean your hat?
No.
I used to call it a ski cap, but now I call it a beanie. I call it a beanie. I refuse to call it. I'm not Canadian. I'm going to call it a toboggan.
Because Southerners call it a toboggan as well. And I actually looked it up why we call it a toboggan and why people call it a toboggan. Because if you talk to most Midwesterners or even out West and you say toboggan, they think you're talking about a sled. And the reason why is because that is. A toboggan is a sled. But because Canada and the South was originally settled by the French, toboggan is a French word. And so toboggan, when you're saying I'm putting on a toboggan, you say I'm like, it's basically you're saying I'm putting on sledding gear. And so that is what they mean. That's why people say that.
Now I feel like a dick because all these years, these people would say, hey, go get your toboggan. Mm-hmm. But they would also say that. So it's, I go, make up your fucking mind. It's either a sled. I go, you don't put a sled on your head. They go, no, that's what you call it, a toboggan. I go, how's a toboggan a hat and a sled?
No. So it's clothes for sledding. It's a toboggan, and that's where it comes from.
Southerners never explained that to me.
We just call it a winter hat or a hat. That's it. There's no fancy fucking words.
I call it a ski cap.
We don't pull out French history. We're just like, get your hat. Make sure you have your gloves and your hat.
Make sure it covers your ears. Your toboggan covers your ears. But I was like, when they first started saying, I go, toboggan? Don't you have a toboggan? I go, no, I don't. We lived in San Diego. We didn't have sleds. And they go, no, toboggan. I go, Yeah, the sled thing. I got. We didn't have it. No, for your head. I go, the fuck you talking about? A ski cap? No, toboggan. I go, oh, just shut the fuck up. No wonder you lost the war.
Wow.
But all right, I'll finish my story and then we can call it a day. But so I go back out and I finish the sidewalk and I'm very happy to, and I take off my pants and my shell pants and I sit down on the couch and then I just feel like my butt is cold as hell. I don't know why. And apparently while I bent over, I ripped my drawers right down the center. So
you ripped your what?
My underwear. Draws. My draws. That's what Southerners call underwear.
I ripped my draws.
Right down the middle.
I teach drawing class.
For everyone who lives below a certain latitude will understand when I say draws what that means.
Fair enough.
Because you people from Tennessee, like I said, when I first moved here, our neighbors.
You people. What kind of podcast is this, Jack?
You Southern people from Tennessee, and their parents were talking to me, and I'm like going, I turn to my wife, I go, I have no idea what they're fucking saying. I'm like going,
closed caption with these people,
exactly. And the two adults, the two males, that they spoke, you know. They had a Southern accent, but at least they you could understand them.
They were bilingual.
They enunciated.
Yeah, exactly. They go, sorry, my parents are, they're from the deep the South in Tennessee. I go, Jesus. I go, I felt rude. I just, hopefully they, you know, it's one of those things where you hope they laugh or they do something, because I had no idea what they're fucking talking about.
Well, I was explaining this to a coworker not too long ago about, especially the Appalachia accent, you know, so we're talking about East Tennessee, West Virginia, the western part of Virginia there, and then Eastern Kentucky, is it's not just the accent, it's the words and how fast they say them.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Because, you know, if you go to the grocery store and the guy at the end of the register says, you know, do you want it in a bag? Do you want paper or plastic? You know, that's normal for most people. But in West Virginia, they say poke instead of sack or bag. And so not only do you have to understand that poke means bag or sack, but if the guy looks at you and says, unit, you know, like, you want it in the poke.
Right.
You have to understand he's saying, do you want it in the bag?
And I would say you have to buy me dinner first.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But that's like most people who don't know that, if someone just says you want it in the poke, you're like, what? What the fuck are you saying?
My wife doesn't let me do that, and neither will you.
Right. But it's just, you know, you have to learn all that.
There's limits, man.
Yeah. There's limits. So no, we were helped out in Vermont several years ago when our van broke down, and we met this kind Vermont gentleman that helped us out. We got back to Indiana after our long travels, called him up to thank him. I could not understand what the fuck he was saying at all. Like, it was so hard. I was just like, uh-huh. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's so true. Mm-hmm. And I felt really bad that I couldn't understand. When I spoke to him in person, it was almost like I could read the lips and I could understand some of the more
body. It's the body.
Yeah. But over the phone, forget about it. I got like 50%.
But over time though, I've learned to speak the language. Hmm. So I understand it, because there was, when we first got there too, they were, a compressor went off upstairs, and they always go, is the man here? Is the man here? Is the man here? I go, and my wife was in charge. I go, you mean Cindy? No, the man. And they were talking about the maintenance guy. And I was they wanted nothing to do with the woman. It was all about the man. They need to talk to the man. I need to talk to the man. Oh, we can't carry this up today. I go, what? Let me get the man, because I don't know what you're fucking talking about. So we ended up having to take it upstairs because they wouldn't do it.
Oh, huh.
And it weighed a ton, but we got it up. We got it up there, but it was like, how are we going to keep that? I go, what did he say? My wife goes, I go, well, first, they don't want to talk to you. Her woman. I go, I need to speak to the man, which was Kevin at the time. I go, I got to get Kevin, because they don't want to talk. She goes, what do you mean they want to talk to me? I go, I'm doing you a favor. I'm doing you a favor. You're not going to understand.
when I sold insurance, I was in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and because it's basically a federal city. It's, you know, it's where the nuclear bomb was created and all that. And the local bank there is Oak Ridge National Laboratory.
It was in Nevada. It was created, or New Mexico.
The Big Boy was created in Oak Ridge. Little Boy was in Washington or Oregon. I can't remember.
Hmm. Really? I thought it was because I watched Manhattan Project. And it was all in New Mexico.
That's where they tested it.
Oh, okay. Okay, all right.
Well, you can only test Little Boy one time.
Boom.
So I was getting this guy's information, and I was like, what bank are you with? And, you know, I'm expecting him to say, like, you know, First State or Bank of America, just anything. But being in the Southern, and instead of saying Oak Ridge National Laboratory Bank, he goes, Arnold. And I look at him, I'm like, what? And he goes, Arnold. And I went, is that a bank? You know, and he's like, and I don't want to insult the guy, but I'm like,
he's saying Bank of America, but you're not figuring
out. Like, I'm just going to start typing in something because Arnold Bank does not sound like a legit bank to me. You know, and he's like, Arnold. And then he finally gets mad. He finally gets that I don't understand what the hell he's saying. He's like, Arnold, Arnold. And I'm like, and then finally someone went, he's saying O R N L. And I went, oh.
Yeah, we'd have customers that come in and they'd be, I go, I don't know what you want. It's like, and it was like going, you felt bad because you're like going, oh, is anybody else around here that can do
what? Write it on this paper and pass it over to me so I can understand.
Sure.
Well, before we go any further, we should let the customers. We should let the customers know where they can get their Arnold banking, their tough sack.
Black Friday's coming up.
Black Friday is upon us. Yeah.
It's Cyber Monday.
Pretty much. I mean, within the next couple of days, or as some of the listeners, I assume, will be listening to this in their Thanksgiving ways, whatever that might be. But anyway, I was going to mention Amazon.com/JanJack as an option. So every little bit helps us out. So helps all of the podcasters. It doesn't matter if we appear on one podcast or 25.
You guys, everybody.
We do appreciate all of the patrons that make this possible. You can go to patreon.com/JanJack, become a patron member there, or go to JanJack.com as Jack recommends, and you can get all of the information there.
It is the easiest way to do it.
It's one-stop shop there, but you actually click on other links that will take you to patreon.com/JanJack.
There's a translate from Southern to English that helps you out.
There might be. You might even find that as a gag gift on Amazon. So there's a couple of patrons that make this possible. Jack, you know their names?
I'll do it in my Southern. You want me to do it in my Southern dialect?
You can, yeah. I'd love to hear it, you know?
Okay, we got Ethan. No, wait. I can't. I'm sorry.
You have totally offended everyone, including the patrons.
Well, that happens. What are you going to do? Oh, they find it funny. So, see, there you are. There you are. Here I'm trying to be creative.
I thought
we had a whole podcast about being creative, and you're just dashing my, you know, you insulted everybody, calling me out in front of the whole class. Now we thank Tech from Paris, even though Jay keeps saying
Tokyo. We know where you're from, Tech.
I have told him 100 times.
It rolls off the tongue better, though. TNT, Tack from Tokyo.
I get it, but it's not. It's Tack from Paris.
I like Tack from Tatooine, personally. But
yeah, I do too.
Eckhart Richter Glaffelter, who Jay has never adopted. Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with the Plan, Ed the Creepy Letter here, and Drake the Destroyer. I was telling that story again to someone else the other day. It's Drake killed me. It was. It's a great story, but it'll never happen again, Drake. Sorry. No, I will not partake in your brownies ever again. Nope. I wouldn't mind someone else doing it and let me watch it. But now we thank everybody, and thanks for listening to our rambles. And to get our review of the Ford versus Ferrari, and Nick has a movie, and there was something
Parasite.
Else.
Parasite.
Oh, you Parasite. Have a Parasite?
That's the name of the film.
My wife had that when she was pregnant with our youngest daughter. She had a parasite, so she...
I would say technically pregnancy is a parasite, but...
We the way it ends there. Up, yes. Anyway, that's all I got.
Great show, guys. One in a million.
Arrivederci.
See ya.
See you next